Since 2013, Bombas has donated over 100 million socks, underwear, and T-shirts to those facing homelessness. If we counted those on air, this ad would last over 1,157 days. But if we counted the time it takes to make a donation possible, it would take just a few clicks. Because every time you make a purchase, Bombas donates an item to someone who needs it.
Go to bombas.com/Wondery and use code Wondery for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/Wondery, code Wondery.
Life is full of personal wins, whether it's cleaning your house, getting that dream car, or checking off your to-do list. Winning at life is a great feeling. And with the State Farm Personal Price Plan, you can keep winning when you create an affordable price just for you by bundling home and auto. So give yourself a round of applause. Talk to a State Farm agent today to learn how you can bundle and save with the Personal Price Plan. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there. Prices are based on rating plans that vary by state. Coverage options are selected by the customer. Availability, amount of discounts and savings, and eligibility vary by state.
Welcome, carbon-based and synthetic life forms, to the Nerdist Podcast number 119. This friggin' country is going to be lousy with Nerdist Podcast lives. We're doing a ton of them. Well, four for now, but that's a ton compared to last year when we did zero. September 22nd, we're going to be at the Iron Horse Music Hall in Northampton, Massachusetts. Then, October 14th, the Nerdist Podcast live at the Gramercy Theater in New York. Then on October 22nd, Nerdist Podcast live at the Aladdin Theater in Portland. And then November 6th, we're going to be at the 930 Club in D.C. So information for all that stuff is at Nerdist.com. Also, the Nerdist Podcast in television form is going to be airing on BBC America September 24th at 10, 9 central in the p.m., please watch that, because then maybe we'll get to do more. If you don't, I won't hold it against you, because it's nice that you're even listening to this. So, I'm not trying to get fucking greedy. I really appreciate the support that you've given the podcast thus far. And if you're new to the Nerdist Podcast, I welcome you with open, non-creepy arms. This particular episode of the Nerdist Podcast is brought to you by Hover.com. Hover's all about making domain registration easy. Over the years, you probably tried to register a domain. I weirdly late at night like to register weird ones. I own dudemynipplesarehuge.com. I don't know why. I'm never going to do anything with it. Anyway, it's fun to register domains, but sometimes when you try to register domains at sites, it's like they try to sell you a million other services, and Hover does not do that at all. It's just about registering domains. They make it super easy. It's simple. Their UI is great. They have a no-hold policy for customer service calls Monday through Friday, 9 a.m. to 8 p.m. Eastern. It's difficult to find on other domain registration services. You can set up email addresses, forward email addresses, redirect, create URL extensions, set privacy controls, all with just a few clicks. Hover has everything you need if you want to register domains. So please go to hover.com, that's H-O-V-E-R.com, and enter the promo code Nerdist. This Nerdist Podcast is also brought to you by GoToMeeting, which, if you've been listening to me blab about it for the last few weeks, is amazing web conferencing software. People who use the service say it's simple, smart, dynamic. People are super happy that they switched over. Just really smart, simple, intuitive controls that allow you to host your first meeting right away. You can schedule in advance. You can schedule on the fly. Everyone sees your desktop on their screen. You can collaborate on files and documents in real time. Yes, it is available for Mac and PC. So sign up today for a free 30-day trial of GoToMeeting. Hold all the meetings you want for one low flat rate. You get phone and voice over IP conferencing service as well for free. So visit GoToMeeting.com, click the Try It Free button, and enter the promo code Nerdist. And now the Nerdist Podcast number 119 with a dude who not only is amazing to watch on screen, but he's just a guy you just like hanging out with. It's Bryan Cranston. What a good dude. I want him to be my uncle. You know what? Fuck it. Nerdist Podcast number 119 with Uncle Bryan Cranston. There, I just made it happen. It's legally binding. Please don't sue me, Bryan Cranston.
Now entering Nerdist.com.
All right, yeah, everyone sounds good. I just start recording. There's no real official intro.
Why not?
Matt'll come in with the waters.
Then we'll do a whole thing about it.
Yeah. Hey, look at you with your fucking waters. You dumb jerk.
Knock it out of your hand.
Knock it out of his hand. Yeah. Watch him cry.
I knew a writer guy that did that all the time. Or like he would have a writer's assistant like bring him lunch, and then he would pay for the lunch and everything, but he would just knock it out of the guy's hand.
Are you shitting me?
Yeah. And then like he wouldn't make him pick it. He was like, oh, what are you doing? He's all, just get out of here. Just treated him like shit.
I didn't think people actually did that.
I got to start doing that.
Yeah, you got to.
That's awesome.
You really are at the place, Bryan Cranston, where you can start knocking shit out of people's hands and they'll be like, well, it's Bryan Cranston. He can do that now. Yeah.
So what's the guy's name who went to get the water?
Matt.
So yeah. Why don't I just start now?
Do you want to try now?
He comes in, when he offers gets back? It to me, and I'll just slap it out of his hand.
All right. So yes, that's going to happen.
You guys have to just like go on like, yeah, what?
Okay.
Don't even recognize it, right?
All right.
It's like, all right, that's going to be hard.
Pick it up, Matt. What are you doing?
Yeah. So should we be mid-conversation when he gets in?
Yeah. By the way, I always do that with my best friend, Mike Furman, who's the nicest guy in the world. And sometimes if he like has a bag of chips in his hand, I just knock him out of his hand because he's so sweet, he doesn't deserve it. There's something so satisfying.
That's why I like making fun of Matt. It's just like the guy is the nicest guy in the world, but like I like making him feel like
but
shit.
Furman laughs so hard when I do it because he just knows that
he doesn't. What was he supposed to do, Chris? Cry?
Yeah, I want to see him cry.
Yeah.
I want to see him cry a little bit.
Will he cry? What do you think his reaction will be when I just... Oh, here he goes. So anyway, I mean, so it's going well.
Yeah, that's really cool, man.
Well but into our...
Joan Rivers' people are swarming. I couldn't get water.
Joan Rivers' people are swarming.
What are you locusts? You can't kick their ass? Joan Rivers' people?
Seriously.
Handbags.
Joan Rivers is like a ceramic vase. Like, you could just knock her over and
Like, she's plastic.
I know.
I can't.
Oh, you're
right. Get right back up.
You're right. She'd just reform like T-1000.
Yeah.
liquid metal.
Ow.
Bryan Cranston, thank you for coming on the podcast.
Glad to be here.
So
thank you.
I was surprised that you remembered meeting me. I met you a couple times because I was friends with Alan Dave Higgins when you guys were doing Malcolm.
Right.
And then I saw you at the Conan show and I couldn't, you were like, hey, we've met at the thing. And I'm like, how do you remember that? You're busy.
Well, I remember you from before Malcolm.
Yeah.
I was doing a TV series called Louis Show.
Yes.
And you were banging some chick on that show.
I don't. Yes. I mean,
way to go, Big C.
You were hanging around. I think it was Betty White. I'm not sure.
It was.
It might have been.
It was. I'm a cotton muncher.
But that's back when she was hot, you know, in her 60s.
She was. That's so true. Like, literally 30 years ago, Betty White was still an elderly woman. Like,
yeah.
So
that's
weird.
The weirdest thing about, like, how long, you can be old. It's like, you know, guys live to 100. It's like, man, 40 years ago, you were still considered old. 40 years ago.
Yes.
Yeah. Well, I'm so old that Betty White is actually just a cougar to me.
You didn't give me any space to go, how old are you?
What do you think it was? I know more than one person who had a sexual fascination with the Golden Girls TV show, which I think was a funny show.
It was a funny show.
But what do you think it was about those women that... I don't know. I don't have that.
I didn't have it either. I don't think anyone did.
That's what made
I think
it so
maybe you're alone on this.
No. My friend Joe Wagner. You know Joe Wagner,
comedian Joe Wagner. But
he's out of his mind. So,
So then we did, and then I saw you again on Conan. And what I didn't realize was you handed me a grape, and I didn't realize the grapes had been in your pants in the vicinity of your dong. But I still
not even in the vicinity.
Jesus.
I see my assumption. So to explain this, it's weird. So what got out on the internet was that my co-star Anna Gunn said, "Well, from time to time, Bryan feels like putting fruit down in his pants." She said it as a joke. So now it gets out there. So I understand you like putting fruit in your pants, and everybody pre-interviews on any show gets that from the producer. They read whatever they read on the internet. I went, really? What? And so Conan thought that was kind of funny. I said, well, okay, we'll make something. And I didn't tell him what I was going to do. I took in our dressing rooms, there were nice, you know, welcome baskets and an automobile. I'm sure you got one too.
You mean like a Hot Wheels? Like a Hot Wheels.
Stock and Apple. No. It was just all laid out there.
Yeah, the Hot Wheels. Oh. That's all it was.
Oh, good.
That's
okay.
All it was.
Yeah.
Cars for A-Block, buddy.
Yeah, Bryan, you and I are about the same place in our careers.
So I busted off a little thing of a little bunch of grapes, and I literally stuck them down my pants. So that when we came out and he said, so I understand you like you put fruit down your pants. I go, well, I don't know where this comes from. It's internet fodder. And my co-star said this one time. I don't know. You know, she was just joking. I'm, there's nothing down. And I started reaching down my pants and say, there is absolutely no. Oh, wait a minute. Whoa, what is. Oh, well, look at that. And I pull out these grapes and I got a laugh and I offered Conan one. He said, no. And I offered Andy Richter one. He goes, yeah, sure, why not?
Nice.
And he took one and he ate it. So then some were all over. So when you came out, I was under the assumption that you had seen the feed.
No, they had me, like, when you were out, they had me, like, backstage and they were miking me up. And so I didn't get to see exactly what you were doing.
That's a good thing, then.
Yeah. So I'm like, thanks for the grape, Bryan Cranston. Munch, munch. And everyone kind of went.
The crowd goes.
So I think my reaction was. What did I just eat? Yeah. What did I just? I just had a weird Bryan Cranston dick grape that I wasn't aware of.
Yeah. Yes, Bryan Cranston.
That could have been one of my grapes.
Bryan Cranston.
Oh, Bryan Cranston's dick
just
grapes.
Like, that'll be your Newman's Own. Yeah. Bryan Cranston's dick grapes.
And a percentage goes to charity.
Some sort of daily charity. On that.
Yeah. It'll be weird when he makes Cranston's Own dick grapes, Thousand Island dressing.
Just because of who our audience is, someone's going to make the graphical representation of that.
So just do it as a Newman's Own.
Bryan Cranston's dick grapes.
Bryan Cranston's dick grapes, available in your grocer's freezer. So you have had an insane.
You can't breed grapes.
What? Nice segue into whatever.
I was choking on my own air.
Bryan Cranston's dick grapes jelly that comes out in a squirtable bottle.
And it's a phallic.
Yeah, it's a very phallic shape.
And you have to like work the juice out of
and
it.
And you take off the top, and there's just this helmet right under it with one little squeeze top. Yeah. And
why do you keep on getting it? No, I know. It's really inconvenient, but it's so good when you get it.
And it's just like charity.
It's just like a picture of a soccer mom on the back just sucking the grape juice out and spitting it onto her kid's toast.
Spitting it onto her kid's toast.
Yeah, she's a mom, so she's not going to swallow it.
Yeah. Oh, that's what mistresses happens. Are for.
Yeah, exactly.
That's the mother of my kids.
Yeah.
She's not going to swallow that.
They kiss my children.
First of all, congratulations on one of the best shows on television. Yeah. Probably the best show on television, Breaking Bad.
Thanks.
That's insane, man. You have like two insane, not only hit shows, but critically acclaimed hit shows back to back.
Yeah.
How long have you been an actor?
32 years.
Holy shit.
Yeah.
So how long did it take you to start to feel like, okay, this is finally paying off?
When by the time I was 24 years old, from that point on, I never had another job other than acting.
Wow.
And it was when I was hired to do a soap opera back in New York. So they actually paid for me to move from Los Angeles to New York and paid me a bunch of money to do this. And I thought, this is it.
Yeah.
And there was something that just kind of clicks that you actually go, no, I deserve this. I've worked hard and I'm ready for this. Mm-hmm. And I'm going to grab it and not let go. And so from that point on, for some reason, that worked.
Well, I don't know if everyone is willing to admit that to themselves sometimes. Like people get so superstitious in this business and we're so insecure. Did you ever feel any of that?
Because you know, when I decided to become an actor all those years ago, I was absolutely willing to, if it meant sharing an apartment with another buddy for the rest of my life, then that's what it was going to be. I didn't have any designs or any. I didn't have an outcome that had to be met.
Mm-hmm.
So whatever happened. If you get a job as an actor, I thought that if you could make your living as an actor, what a great gift. And I still feel that way.
Yeah. And it's amazing that now, I mean, when you started, I guess 32 years ago, now there's so much. I mean, a show like Breaking Bad, you just couldn't do shows like that before on television. And it was so there were only so many shows and only so many channels. And now there's this landscape of amazing television being made.
It was the three big networks. And then later on, Fox joined in.
Mm-hmm.
But the whole television and movie business model was completely different than what we see now.
Yeah. Was there ever a show that you jumped on where you thought, oh, my God, here we go. This is going to be the one. And then almost instantly, just as it happens in the business.
again, I think it's because I never had any, I wasn't looking down the
road. Matter.
It was, I'm working on this show, and I you know, subscribe to that belief that you can only focus on what you can control and let everything else go.
That is crazy zen of you. We say this thing on the podcast where we tell people to enjoy their burrito, which basically means live in the present, like don't live in the past or the future. And I think if more people could do what you're saying, there'd be a lot, we'd be a lot happier.
There'd be a lot less burnouts in Hollywood, for sure. People that can just enjoy the process.
It's amazing that you say that, enjoy your burrito, because burrito in Spanish does mean embrace.
Does it really?
No.
Oh, I thought it was donkey. Just like a tiny donkey. embrace. We should start saying embrace the tiny donkey on the show. Yeah.
Embrace the tiny donkey and have the dick grapes with you.
Oh, Brian Cranston's dick grapes?
Brian Cranston's dick grapes.
I mean, he really, I mean, as far as dick grape technology.
Brian Cranston's dick grape, bring you chipotle salsa.
Chipotle.
It's a sweet sauce.
Chipotle. So it seems like, I assume that whenever you're on a set, it's probably a lot of fun and there's no, it just, I can't imagine. I hear stories about people like, oh, this person wouldn't come out of their trailer because of that person. And it's like, what? Why? This is crazy that we get to do this. Why does everyone have to be douchebags about it? Like,
exactly
why not just,
right.
why not just, it should be fun.
Chris, actors are better than people.
I thought
we're
totally better than real people.
We learned anything.
Someone was asking me, no, who are the real jackasses that you've worked with over the years? And I started thinking about it, and I can't count on one hand. There's like a two or three that I would not care to work with again because of their behavior. And then there's a couple people who I would not work again with again because of how they work. Mm-hmm. But they happen to be nice people.
Yeah. You could just say Frankie Muniz.
All right. There it is.
Oh,
I didn't know if we could or not.
He doesn't listen to this show.
He's retired.
He's a great kid. He's actually working again, and he's driving cars, and he's drumming. Here's the guy who is a professional actor.
He's living life.
He's living life, baby. He's in a band that tours and is actually, they've got a CD coming out very soon. That's supposed to be great.
Oh, that's awesome.
Yeah. And then also he drives cars for a living.
Yeah.
Race cars.
Wow. I don't think I knew that.
Way into cars even before he could legally drive.
Yes,
right?
Exactly.
Yeah. That's got to be such a head trip when you're a kid and all of a sudden you just go from kid to instantly famous and hit show. I mean, I don't even know. How does a kid even process that? How do you race cars?
That's what you do.
You just buy race cars.
That's what you do.
I think and if you're not pleased with your mother and father and how they're dealing with your success, you just buy new ones.
Yeah, you can buy new parents. Yeah, fuck them.
Yeah.
You work for me.
Central casting. Let's go. Let's see some people. I need to see more. I'm just
Mom
not
and
getting
dad,
it.
You know who's a good dad? All the money I made into Brian Cranston's dick grapes? What's wrong with you?
It's going to be a hit. Out of the squeezable tube.
You know, I think what we could do is just on a label somewhere in the background of a scene of Breaking Bad, just dick grapes. Just somewhere in the background.
Yeah.
You'd have to zoom in to see it. It wouldn't affect the scene. Do you think Vince Gilligan would be okay with that?
We have to sneak it in. So if I can get that object, I'll sneak it in a scene next season.
It's real subtle. So you're just making a sandwich, not even referring
it just
to it.
Like or else pick up the grape juice, the grape jelly,
and work it all over two croissants that are set right next to each other. Just shoot them all over. I often get this on Twitter from people. Hey, you and Aaron Paul look like brothers. Do we look alike? Do you think
there
we look
is
similar?
A resemblance.
Is there a white guy resemblance?
There is a resemblance, yeah. You should have Aaron in on here.
I would love to have him on. Yeah, he's amazing. I mean, the show, I keep saying there's a golden age of television right now, and there's so many wonderful shows on, but Breaking Bad is just one of those shows where in one minute, there's something a little quirky that happens. In the next minute, you're like, holy fuck. You're just like gripping onto your fucking chair.
I think 5 years ago when this was pitched would be the earliest time that a show like this would have been conceived.
Right.
And accepted. You look 10 years ago, in fact, I got to give credit to our studio, Sony, who when our television presidents, our co-presidents, brought this to their chairman, and the three of them brought it in to the chairman of Sony International, and they said,
here's what we'd like to do. And he said, this has got to be the worst idea for a television show ever, ever. But because you guys believe in it so much, I'm going to let you do it. Go ahead and make it.
Wow.
I don't get it, but I know that you get it.
That's a smart executive. Why aren't there more executives like that?
Yeah. Michael Linton.
That's awesome.
He said that.
But the AMC people who I've worked with before, they're pretty fucking sharp. Like I think, you know, any other channel would have made 50 Mad Men's after Mad Men came out.
They'll leave that up to CBS.
Yeah, exactly. Like, this is the season where every network was like, oh, no Mad Men? Let's all make a Mad Men.
Yeah, the Playboy Club.
The Playboy Club. Pan Am. Yes, Pan Am. I mean, I like the aesthetic and everything, but, like, you know.
But that's, like, all they're taking from it. Ah, yes, retro.
You know, but to have a channel that has, Mad Men and Walking Dead and Breaking Bad and
Jurassic Park
and
on all
Rubicon
the time.
That's true.
Killing in HD, no less.
Jurassic Park probably pays a lot of bills for them.
Oh, yeah, yeah, sure, yeah.
It's great.
I watched it the last time I was on AMC.
It was on last night.
Clever girl. Yeah. I saw a girl with a T-shirt that had a little dinosaur on it with a Rubik's Cube, and it said Clever Girl in the Jurassic Park font. Clever Girl.
He's dead now.
Hey, you're in Rock of Ages.
Yeah.
I did Rock of Ages in L.A. when it started.
Oh, no kidding.
And then I couldn't go to New York and do it because I was working in L.A., and then it became a big movie. And I'm still weirded out by it because, to me, it's just this little thing that we were doing in a rock club in L.A. for, you know, a year.
Yeah.
So how was the experience?
It was great. They've changed it somewhat from the stage play.
Mm-hmm.
So I am the mayor of Los Angeles.
Yes, yes.
And Catherine Zeta-Jones is my wife.
Jesus Christ.
I know. Yeah, I know. It's like, and she's beautiful.
Yeah.
She's like really stunning to look at.
Were there moments where you were just staring at her and they were like, Brian, that's your line, Brian?
Yeah. Oh, sorry. Sorry.
Try my dick grapes.
Catherine, you want to see the dick? I have dick grapes here.
Oh, that's
like,
funny because I have Catherine Zeta Jones pussy jelly. What?
Whoa.
We have to get together.
We'll put it in the same jar like goobers.
But it's grapes and jelly together.
I mean, if only Catherine had pussy peanut butter, it would be better. It'd be better mix.
Catherine Zeta-Jones pussy butter. Catherine Zeta-Jones pussy butter. Guys, why are we not making this?
Oh, because we don't own her name.
So how was
it?
I'm stepping away from all this.
stepping away.
Oh, God. Yeah, it was great. And I got to sing and Hit Me With Your Best Shot.
Yep.
And, you know, this beautiful young girl that I'm making out with is pulling down my pants and spanking me.
You were married to Catherine Zeta-Jones, and I don't understand.
This was the 80s, man. This takes place in the 80s.
Everybody's swinging, baby. Yeah.
It's fucking Sunset Strip, dude.
Hey, okay. It's key parties.
Oh, okay.
You know?
Key parties and blizzards of Coke raining down on the Sunset Strip. Glam rock, big hair.
Yeah. That was fun. It was a lot of fun. And Adam Shankman is the director, and he's terrific. You probably see some clips online.
Yeah.
Tom Cruise plays Nicky Jax.
Stacy Jax. That was the part I played.
Did you play?
Yeah.
Oh, wow. That's a great role.
Yeah, they took a step up in the film version with
but a step down in height.
Tom Cruise.
he's good.
Yeah.
He's totally and completely committed to this character. He's really
I've seen the pictures. Awesome. He looks awesome.
Yeah. I mean, you know, he's in fucking insane shape.
Yes.
That guy.
Yeah.
That first promo still of him with the shirt off and the hair. I mean, like, he's got the body of like a 25-year-old.
He's 50. Isn't that crazy?
Yeah, he's 50, but he looks amazing.
A lot of dedication.
Unbelievable. His amount of dedication is it cannot be matched. I have never seen anyone who comes with as much work ethic as him.
Yeah.
He finishes a scene and he's sweating and he sits on a stool. Like a prize fighter between rounds, and he's getting mopped and dried off by makeup and hair and wardrobe, and they're fixing things, and he's going, notes, bring him,
oh wow,
bring him, you know, to the choreographer, to the director, to the guy who's watching the lip sync, to the come on, bring him. It's all his own voice, but then we lip sync it, of course.
Yeah, of course.
And so I mean, it's like, let's go again. So he's just, you cannot be lazy around Tom Cruise.
Yeah,
He's a really unbelievable.
That's why I wasn't in
dedicated.
Top Gun.
You were not. That's why you weren't in Top Gun.
Yeah, I was almost there. Like, he's too lazy.
Yeah. Also, you were like four.
Yeah, but I could have flown a plane.
Oh, Top Gun.
What's that child doing in that coffin?
I don't know, Maverick.
Tiny Maverick.
Oh, I would love to see like a. I would love to see like a dwarf version of Top Gun. I would just love to see
with his buddy Gosling.
Yeah. Did you see the Ryan Gosling breaking up the fight video?
No, I haven't seen that yet.
I didn't see that.
There's these two guys that are fighting over something in a street, and this statuesque.
Yeah.
Like I had no idea how cut that guy is.
He's really cut.
Steps in and just like puts a hand on one guy, and he's like, "Well, let's just talk about this," you know. And he charms the fight away. With his Ryan Gosling-esque...
Gosling talent.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That old Gosling talent.
That old Gosling talent.
He's got...
I did a movie with him, and it's coming out next month.
Oh, that's awesome.
Drive.
Yeah, Drive.
Which looks insane.
I've heard amazing things about Drive.
It looks incredible.
Drive is a ride. I'm telling you, it is...
Well, this interview's over.
No, get back here.
It's a pretty awesome movie. It
looks
really
amazing.
Awesome.
It looks like you know, like the art house's action movie.
Yeah. It was shot conventionally. I mean, it was it's terrific because we had a great experience. Nicholas Refn's the director, and he got Ryan with me, with Carrie, with Ron Perlman and Albert Brooks, and we're in his living room and we're pitching out ideas from what each individual had. I said, "Well, I'm thinking this, and I'm thinking," and we're writing, and it was in the script. The things that we were pitching out ended up in the script because he wanted that collaboration, and everybody's like on board, and it made you feel really terrific, not just a hired gun actor, but actually part
of a creative
of
process.
The creative process. Yeah,
that's amazing.
It's really cool.
Kind of sounds like he didn't want to write the movie himself.
Kind of.
I don't know.
Yeah, I know. It's everything about like the trailer is beautiful, and even like the poster art. It's just like that's a fucking good looking poster. Yeah. Everything about the movie looks amazing.
When does that open?
It opens on the 16th of September. It is very cool. You got to see that.
Yeah. I've been seeing the posters for it. It looks good.
That guy. What else did he direct? Other kind of visually.
Bronson.
That's right. He directed Bronson and Valhalla Rising.
Yep.
The guy is... Have you seen either of those movies?
No.
They're nuts. Bronson and both Valhalla Rising, I think, are both on Netflix Insta-Watch. And they're just like... You just watch them. Sometimes you don't even know what's going on.
Yeah.
But you're just entranced. Just like you need to see what the shots are, how beautiful it is. Everything is like a painting.
Nicholas Refn. Yeah. He's really, really cool guy. And very, like I said, very collaborative, very... giving and warm, give and take, and he wants to hire the people and let them go and do what they want to do because that ultimately they're going to feel comfortable if they're in that character. You know, so it was a fantastic experience.
Yeah, that sounds awesome.
Now you're at a place where I imagine people are offering you stuff like Drive, and you know you probably get a lot of scripts that come in. People are always asking you to do stuff. Is it nerve-wracking at all when you can pick pretty much anything you want to do about picking the right thing? Or it seems like you. It seems like you have a pretty good eye for stuff.
Well, the main thing is to only pick projects that are well written.
Mm-hmm.
That's the key. That's the common denominator. Don't pick anything that is not well written.
So look for misspellings, grammatical errors.
Exactly right.
Your Y-O-U-R, where Y-O-U apostrophe R-E should be.
Mispunctuation, things like that. Get rid of it all. There's a lot that comes in. This is a big blockbuster movie, and this is there's a lot, and there's a big role, and you read it, and you go, I don't get it.
Mm-hmm.
And there are a few that I just didn't get, and so I have to pass on it because not only do you not get it, but I wouldn't know really what to do with that role if you're not responding to it when you read it.
Yeah.
So. But there's a lot to go around. I'm in Contagion as well. That's coming
that
out
looks great.
In a couple of weeks.
Aren't you in September?
Bryan Cranston month at the Grove. Come on by. Get some free Bryan Cranston's dick grapes. See Contagion and Drive.
Yeah, that's a really scary film as well. That's a fun. And Steven Soderbergh, who directed that, is just a terrific guy. And We were working in Chicago in my segment of Contagion, and we'd work about 10 hours a day, no more than that, which is a luxury to anybody in our business. And then we'd go back to the hotel, and he'd say, he'd say, come on down to the bar. And we'd go to the bar, and there was a sectioned off area of the bar of the Four Seasons, and we'd order wine, and we'd order, get something to eat, some sushi, get whatever you want. And he'd have his laptop down there, and he's typing away. And I go, Stephen, what are you doing? He goes, I'm cutting. I go, what are you cutting? He's cutting the movie in the bar of the hotel.
I thought
on his laptop.
I thought he was writing invoices for all of you.
Yeah.
Chris, what did you have?
What did you?
So she got. Yeah,
we'll take that.
Yeah,
we'll
wine? What that. Kind? Oh,
Chris is thick grapes.
I didn't order that. Yeah.
Complimentary with
no,
everyone.
No, no. I'm sorry. This is Bryan Cranston's dick wine. It was fermented.
That's right.
Bryan Cranston dick grapes. It's a dick wine.
Excellent.
Do you? When you go on to a set and you work with these guys, you know, like people like Soderbergh or just other actors, do you feel like a sponge? Are you just do you still feel like you're learning stuff at
Always.
This point in your career?
Always, yeah. I mean, because as an actor is in a certain age category, that's you'll get roles that are appropriate for that age. When I was your age, that's what I was doing, you know, college age things or whatever. And then the dad, or you're doing dad stuff and dad ages, and now I'm old enough to be a grandfather, and so you're looking at different things and different approaches. You're watching actors differently than you saw them as when you were a kid, and the actor's job is observation. And so what I tell young actors, I say, shame on you if you're ever bored. Actors should never be bored. There's always work to do.
Mm-hmm.
Watching and studying human behavior, and you file it away. And at some point during your career, you'll be able to go, I know what I can do with that. Something that is appropriate and yet interesting and different.
Oh, yeah. That's because it seems like most people just want to be famous. And so there's no, when they're on set, you don't really feel a sense of craft. It's just like, I got to do this thing. I'm going to go figure some chick in the trailer.
Right.
I really like the way you play Buzz Aldrin in From the Earth to the Moon.
I was going to bring that up. Matt is a huge NASA nerd.
Oh, cool. Thanks,
but
man.
I liked it because there's a little something back there in your head of like...
Talking to the microphone, Matt.
Jealousy of not getting on the moon first. And then I was like, oh, this is really good.
It was a fantastic... It was a fun experience. I was actually... How that came about, I've known Tom... Hanks, who was the executive producer of the show, and I was working on a sitcom at the time called Pearl, I believe it was. I was just a hired hand for the guest, guest of the week, and it was with Malcolm McDowell, Rhea Perlman, Malcolm McDowell, and a few other people, and I was playing this very, very effeminate guy who was like Isaac Mizrahi. It's like that's flittering around the stage. And there was a call on that Friday night when we were taping, and there was a call came in. Oh, my God. Well, Tom Hanks is on the phone. Tom Hanks is on the phone. What? He wants to talk to you. Tom Hanks wants to talk to you.
Don't hang up on him. Don't hang up on him.
And I go, hey, Tom, how are you? Good, man. He said, good, man. How are you? Good, 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 good. I'm working on the... Oh, say hi. Are you still thin? And I said, yeah. I haven't seen him in a while. I go, yeah. He goes... Good. Can you be in Orlando on Monday morning? And I said, yes, I can. Yes. Because this job was ending. I said, yeah, I can. He goes, okay, great. I just need to get that word out and they'll send you the stuff. And they go, Tom, Paul, wait. What? What am I doing? Oh, yeah. You're going to play Buzz Aldrin in From the Earth to the Moon.
Oh, just that.
And I'm stunned. And I go, you there? I go, yeah. Buzz Aldrin. Yeah. Gee, can you ask them, please request to send me research material right away to the house so I can study it on the plane? And, okay, you're going to start Monday morning. Okay, I got to get on a plane tomorrow morning. Okay, fine, thank you. Good. Hung up. You ready? Yeah. Okay, let's go.
Back to work. And then it bleeds over, and From the Earth to the Moon, where you're like, let's go to the moon. Cut, Brian. Again, Buzz Aldrin's not really, he wasn't really flamboyant in that way.
Got it.
So who's getting out first?
I already did.
That is so, what an amazing experience. You've known, I guess, to you, getting a call from Tom Hanks is different than if I were to get a call from Tom Hanks, where I probably wouldn't be able to, but you guys sounds like you've been friends for a while.
Yeah. He's been very kind to me. I was in his movie, Larry Crown, that just came out earlier this year and had a blast. And I was, Julia Roberts' husband in that one.
Wow!
Yeah!
What the? That's awesome! Yeah.
Couldn't push that to September? Come on.
Pretty fun. It was fun.
Cranston,
pack it in.
How have you felt about, you know, it was, you said something kind of struck me interesting. You were talking about, you know, different age groups as you go through your career. Is any of that weird? I feel like I'm kind of getting to a point in my life where I had never noticed my age before, and now I'm starting to be aware of it. And I don't know. Are you comfortable with aging, or would you ever feel weird about it?
No, I am very comfortable with it. You have to embrace that, because when you look at my face and the amount of crag on it, you know, I look like a Sharpay at this stage in my life. Back in the 70s when I was in high school, there was no sunscreen there, and I rode motorcycles, and I'm out, and you get baked, and you know, there's nothing. And so this is what, this should be a lesson. I should be on a poster. Don't let this happen to
no,
your skin.
No, you're talking about, you're a handsome guy. Like, you look like a dude, you know?
I'm a dude, all right.
Yeah, you got a good dude vibe.
Even, well, the thing is, the most important thing that any actor really could do is to correctly identify who you really are.
Right.
And what you do well. And then go after that. And you look at, I read things and I go, I'm not right for that. I'm not right for that. No one is going to buy me as this, you know, wimpy guy. And so when I was talking about Walter White in the beginning stages, that he wasn't wimpy. He was just, he lost his impulse. He lost his desire to live, and he was depressed. So that's different from being a wimpy kind of, you know, milquetoasty kind of guy. He was a guy who
shoved it down.
Yeah. Well, he had all those different circumstances with the family and a special needs child and being a teacher and being on a teacher's salary. And so it's, I never got the sense like, oh, that guy's a pussy. It's just like, he's just a guy who just life happened to him.
Yeah, it was the first or second episode where like those kids are making fun of his kid. And then you like run. It's almost like you leave the store to just like pump it up. Because it's like, it's been a while. I have to bring it up to come in and then just kick some high schooler's ass.
Yeah.
Well, that was a great moment.
It is. There is something that is very attractive and seductive about intimidation for a man. Any person who can intimidate someone else, that is when the chest goes out and then you start. I mean, it is very intimidating. It's not what you want to do in our society, to go around intimidating people. You won't be employed long. It's like, come on, we can't have that. But for Walter White in his condition now, that was a real eye opener for him. That he can intimidate someone who he's never been able to do that in his entire adult life.
I mean, I want to, you know, I'm hesitant to talk too much about the show, because what tends to happen with our podcast is people like to watch series as a whole.
Yeah.
And so we get complaints a lot from people like, spoiler alert, why didn't you tell me you were talking about that in the show? So because Breaking Bad is so current, you're in the fourth season right now. I do want to delve more into it, but I'm just a little hesitant.
Sorry, listeners. Buzz landed on the moon.
Hey, right. What the fuck? Come on, man. Some people didn't
even see that yet.
Sorry. Fucking ruined it. So, you know, I might talk more about process and how you approach the character. And I what's fascinating to me is going from a character like Hal and going from a show that has Malcolm was a very kind of surreal vibe to it in a weird story, even though it was like, this is the typical American family, sort of. But there was a very surreal, just in the way it was directed and the way it was presented. And so, you know, how do you approach Hal versus Walter or any job? It just seems like a case-by-case basis. You build a universe.
You build a universe. That's exactly right. The one thing that I look for in any character that I do is to find the emotional core of any character. So with Hal from Malcolm in the Middle, it became easy because it was kind of on the page there. And it was fear. He was afraid of everything. He was afraid of being a bad husband, a bad father, losing his job, afraid of heights, afraid of bees, afraid of this. You know, he was afraid. And so a lot of comedy can come off of that. But that was a very real emotion, is that we know people who can be fearful. Mm-hmm. And so that was his core. He was afraid of everything. And with Walter White on Breaking Bad, I had a hard time finding who that guy was. And I researched and researched and trying to figure out, and many nights of not sleeping to try to go, what is his emotional core? I can't find it. And then I realized why. It's because he was so depressed at the beginning of our series that his whole emotional core has been calloused over. he hasn't allowed a true emotion to bubble up to the surface in years because of depression. Mm-hmm. And that's what people do. There's what I've discovered in playing it in the beginning stages, people either who are depressed either go inward or outward. The inward is the way Walter White went. Mm-hmm. He became invisible. He went to seed. He became a little chubby. He wore clothes that would blend into the wall, which is all by design, by the way.
Wow.
And so he was insignificant as a human being. Or the people who are depressed go the other way. They go outwardly. That son of a bitch, he screwed me out of my, you know, that he messed me up. If it wasn't for my ex-wife, you know, that guy took my job. And, you know, you go out and you blame others for where you are.
I know 1 or 100 of those types of people.
And it's really, I mean, in the broad strokes, it's really one way or the other.
Wow, that's, I'd never really thought of it that way. But what's interesting about that is that I really get a sense now that on a production, something that makes a show, it surprises me that any good shows ever get made, just because of the process is so many things have to come together between direction and lighting and cinematography and music and acting and network stuff. Yeah. But you know, it sounds like with the Malcolm team and with the Breaking Bad team, it feels like you guys worked pretty much as a team to sort of develop these characters. And I'm sure as you were bringing the fear out of Hal or the depression out of Walter, the writers must have informed the direction that they took the characters.
It does. It feeds each other. You're a symbiotic relationship. So once they were seeing what Hal was doing on Malcolm in the Middle, they I can write for that.
Yeah.
There's a lot to write for that.
Yeah.
And so they started feeding that beast.
Yeah.
You know, and that's good as an actor. You don't want to go in and just do what's on the page. That's boring.
Yeah.
You want to be able to bring a specific tone to it, a specific point of view.
Yeah.
And therefore, it helps the actor ground him or herself in the work. So the better the writing, the easier it is for the actor. So it feeds you. It comes in as, oh, my God, that's rich. That's perfect, perfect. And you get something that you can hold on to. The hardest work I've ever had to do is on really terribly written material where you go, this just doesn't make sense. It's not plausible. There's no character here. But if I try this, then this has to be rewritten. This other actor's character has to change which I think is a good, you know, then you have to open it up and say, what if he's become, just leave it, you know. So you're almost like an island having to create your own character that kind of lives in and of itself and may not have any relationship or any, it's the hardest work ever. That.
And then at that point, emotionally, you probably just have to let it go and be like, well, I just got to finish this job now. There's really nothing I can do.
Yeah. And you just let it go and you move on.
And the UCB theater, which is, we do a lot of comedy shows at UCB. In their improv training, they have this thing. The basic concept of it is, you know, in any scene, it's how fast can you find the game, which is just that seed, that thing that everyone can latch onto and then drive the scene forward. It sounds like that's pretty similar.
That's for me personally as an actor, but you don't bring that to other actors because they work differently. So you don't say, hey, here's my emotional core. What is yours? It's like, what are you talking about? It's not necessarily what they do. And certainly you're not going to take that to your showrunner and say, here's what we should do. And, you know,
right.
But, I do, when I had my hour and a half meeting with Vince Gilligan, the first time we were talking about Breaking Bad, I did tell him all those things. I told him that he should have hair that always needs a haircut. He should have this impotent mustache. He should have these glasses because he's hiding from the world. It should show it should have a subliminal impact that he's given up.
Mm-hmm.
He's just putting one foot in front of the other now. And until something breaks, this is who this man is. And people can relate to that. I mean, I think we know people who have that kind of condition.
Well, and I think something about the show that I think is one of the most compelling things is that I think with most other actors and most other directors, the show could have gotten silly where it's like, oh, chemistry teacher becomes a meth dealer, you know. But the fact that it seems so deeply rooted in stuff that feels real, that it doesn't
you can relate in a way where you're like, I guess if that were my life and that were those were my options, what's happening is not super crazy. People do crazy things, you know? That's just humanity.
Our show really asks those questions that have been asked at dinner tables for decades and decades. What would you do if you had a year and a half or 2 years to live?
Mm-hmm.
And what would you do for $1 million?
Yeah.
And we answer both of those. And it's hypothetical to us here, but to those characters, Walter is living in that hypothetical.
Yeah.
It ceases to be hypothetical to him. It's real.
Yeah.
He made those choices of what he would do if he had a year and a half to live. And he made that choice. What would you do for $1 million? Will you kill another person for $1 million if you knew you can get away with it?
And that's where it gets really human and gray in the show, is that he, you know, by most accounts, he has these sort of selfless, altruistic intentions. And I love storytelling where the intentions are good, but where the lines of morality blur, because it's like, oh, his intentions are good. He wants to help his family, but he has to do all this fucked up shit to do it. But is that okay? Is it okay to steal bread to feed your family, right? Basically,
The beauty of that is that Vince Gilligan painted this picture of to bring morality right to that line, and then leave it, and let everybody else decide if it's right or wrong. Every move that I make, some people are saying, "Oh, what is it?" Some people hate the Anna Gunn character, Skylar, my wife.
Right.
She's such a bitch. She's on your ass all the time. And I go, wait a minute. I've been lying to her. She's worried about me. She wants me to tell her, you know, the truth and what's going on. And it's like, that's why. Yeah, it's true.
Yeah, it says a lot about a person.
Yeah.
What her takes on it.
Yeah. Oh, my exactly. God. That scene where she has the affair with the guy and she comes in the kitchen and I'm just trying to make everything okay. And then she says,
wait. Oh, spoiler alert.
Damn it. Oh, shit.
Come on. If the season's passed,
they'll forget it by then.
Okay. Yeah. All right. I'll put a little disclaimer in the thing that just says there are a couple of spoilers here and there.
But
that scene where she just says, and they dropped it out of the, like, they dropped the word out, but I can't remember the character's name. She says, I fucked Ted.
Yeah.
I fucked Ted. Just that moment.
Hey, it's Rain.
Hey, Rain. Hey. Rain.
Rain Wilson.
Rain. Wait.
Rain, go get me coffee. Rain, get me some coffee.
Can I come in for a sec? Hey, Matt, go bring Rain in.
That's funny.
He was just out panhandling, and
is funny. Do you guys have some change?
And there's a superhero right behind him.
Oh, that's the, what's that? That's that guy. That? That's that guy. That's the
superhero.
Phoenix Jones, you guys. That's the superhero guy.
That's superhero?
Fuck yourself in the face, Jonah.
That's my favorite comic book, superhero.
Superhero. What should we call him, though?
Yeah, no, superhero.
But what's his name?
Superhero.
Superhero.
Okay, we got that, but what are we going to call him?
Superhero.
I don't understand why this is confusing to you guys.
He's not too strong.
People like simple concepts. Superhero.
What's the problem?
What kind of hero?
A superhero. Phoenix Jones. Yeah. Oh, here comes
Rain. Knock something out of his hand when he gets in here.
Knock something. Matt's got to bring water back.
Great,
I think the superhero is coming with him.
Jesus Christ.
That's the guy. That's like, isn't that the guy who does like the street vigilante stuff?
Oh, is it?
That guy?
Well, shouldn't he be arrested then?
Oh, God, you guys. Yeah, this is a sting operation.
You should
knock the grappling hook out of his head.
Hey, Jonah, would you mind hopping over to this mic so we can stick Rain on this mic?
Wow.
Yeah, what a fun.
That's exciting.
Yeah, Rain's a sweetheart. He's a nice guy. Have you worked with him before?
I've never worked with him, no. I don't particularly like him.
Oh, shit. Bring him in then. What a piece of shit. Yeah, fuck that guy. Seriously. It was easy when he was on the other side of the glass, but seriously, fuck him.
Yeah, that's where all, you know, people you don't care about should be on the other side of the glass.
Oh, I'm a talented actor who picks a lot of good things to work on and does them expertly.
And that's why Breaking Bad is a far superior show than The Office.
No, wait. He's right there. Brian. Bam. Oh, my God.
I need a superhero.
This mic over here is mic, Rain Wilson.
Hey, good, man.
What a fun.
Good to see you.
Rain.
I don't want to crash the party here.
No.
I can't tell you what a refreshing thing it is. Like, you see fucking Kardashians coming into this building all the time, and you feel your soul die every time. But you, come in here and you, hello, thank you very much. Oh, protect me with the shield. Thank you so much. Oh, this is for Rain. But, you know, but to see you walk in the building, like, oh, there's still some good in the world.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, I made your soul flutter, didn't I?
Just a little bit.
Your soul got a little chubby.
Love your, I call it a plumpy, if that's all right. Plumpy. I call it a plumpy.
This is like my favorite actor in the universe, you guys.
Have you guys know each other? You know each other.
We've met. We've met. At the doing the award show dance. I'm like, oh, hello.
Hello. Yeah, good to see you.
Hello.
Is there anything like the Super Bowl shuffle? Yeah.
The award show. Yeah. How are you guys doing? Nice to see you. You know, when I did the Nerdist podcast, I think you had a cassette tape recorder on your kitchen table.
That's right.
And now you're in a real fucking radio station. What's going on?
You helped us tip it. You helped the show tip, and now we have a facility.
Enormous microphones.
They're more than necessary.
Yeah.
They were modeled after my dick grapes.
Yes.
I've been watching the show. It's so magnificent.
Thanks,
and I always tweet about Breaking Bad as the best show on TV, and everyone at the office always talks about it. And the office would gladly, everyone in the office would say, oh yeah, Breaking Bad is a way better show than
you know what's funny about what you're saying right now is most people, when they say everyone at the office, they just mean their place of work. The show, The Office.
I mean the show, The Office. Yeah.
Which is your office.
Yeah. But what do you do? Why are you here? You're not a nerd.
I'm just a nerd wannabe. No, like Chris was saying, you're a dude.
Cranston's a dude.
Do you like shoot guns and work out? And what do you do?
Yeah, I ride motorcycles, and you know, we're not talking about the elephant in the room here. By the way,
I know. And
we have to.
Are you the actual guy, the vigilante guy?
Yeah, this is.
I prefer superhero. Vigilante
is
legal.
This is Phoenix Jones.
Yeah,
he's a real life superhero from the city of Seattle, Washington.
I've seen many of your videos online. It's an honor to meet you.
We're pitching a TV show about Phoenix and going around the town and doing that. And for you viewers, for you listeners, right now he's in Kevlar vest and a rubber suit that's black and gold, a cowl mask. He's got a taser, weapons belt, and high-grade body armor on everywhere.
And a huge codpiece.
Gigantic codpiece.
But I think most of the people who listen to this podcast are well aware of Phoenix Jones and the work you've been doing. I'm actually going to Seattle this weekend.
Oh, really?
Are you going
this weekend?
Yeah, for PAX, for the Penny Arcade Expo.
You should come out with us.
I would love to. Are you kidding me?
I've got an extra bulletproof vest, and I got a mask.
Why don't you come out with you to fight crime?
Most definitely.
No, I'm a pussy. No, it doesn't work that way.
You should go fight crime with
him. Dude, you should come fight crime with me.
Do you ever fight pussy? Because then he'd be good to bring along.
You know, this is totally ridiculous. First off, my wife fights crime, and she just recently beat me in a pull-up contest.
Oh,
so
shit.
I don't think I'd want to mess with her, but... There's women that go around Seattle with the goal of trying to find out my secret identity or tempt me into sleeping with them. It's really ridiculous.
Oh, God, I hate when that happens.
But the cod is removable, so you can keep the cod.
It's flappable.
Shit.
Just in case I got to go to the bathroom.
They call those women, they call them cape chasers.
Cape chasers.
Yeah. Are you enjoying my bulletproof riot shield over there?
I do enjoy your riot shield. This is actually kind of a heavy piece to carry around all day.
Well, it stops the bullets.
Criminals started carrying axes in my city and shotguns, so I decided that...
Who the fuck carries an axe?
Legal in Seattle, open carry.
Kids in Seattle, little meth kids.
Yeah.
Since I am not of this ilk, I'm the motorcycle riding dude.
Yeah.
I think we've just been outdueded by a superhero.
I don't know your history. Can someone explain
Phoenix basically took it upon himself to fight crime as a citizen superhero in the streets of Seattle and has been doing that. And you know, like basically just going out and Rain did the movie Super. Which was amazing. That movie fucked me up a lot.
Yeah, it'll do that.
like your movie is you're like, oh, this is a cute, quirky movie.
No, it's
Jesus
not.
Christ.
Yeah. It's one of the darkest, most. It's a really evil work of cinema,
especially with the opening, that animated piece that Cuny did in the opening.
It starts very funny, and you think it's a comedy, and then it starts to turn, and it gets weirder and sicker and darker as it goes.
Yeah, so basically, that's what Phoenix
kind of like Breaking Bad.
He went too far with his, but that's kind of the idea. Like my life was kind of funny like that too, and then all of a sudden I got shot, and I was like, well. That was not what I saw coming.
What did that feel like?
You know what's funny about getting shot?
Nothing.
There's no music. There's no women. Nothing.
Really?
It's just cold.
There should be an app on your phone that when you get shot, it goes like music plays.
I agree. When I get famous, that's what I'm doing. Getting the iPhone I Got Shot app.
Yeah.
You know, they got T-Pain app. Why can't I get a Phoenix Jones I Got Shot app?
Yeah. He got shot fighting crime.
So you really fight crime. You seek out the criminals of the on the street, and you stop them from what they're doing.
Yeah, 30 or so criminals down, about 150 pages of police reports. We'll leave you with we got a little DVD of some cool crime fighting stuff. We'll leave you with a little DVD.
So I take it that because you keep your identity secret, your name isn't really Phoenix.
Really? It's actually Phoenix Smith, but he changed it to Jones to throw people off.
Well, the weird thing about having a secret identity, right, is that people know, like, the mask is supposed to cover your identity, but the mask is super famous. When I walk around the city, people are like, oh my God, it's Phoenix Jones. Like, the regular guy, they don't really care. They're not that interested.
Have you seen any Phoenix Jones knockoffs?
There's a homeless dude in a cardboard box downtown that yells at other homeless dudes when they beg on his corner. He's got, like, a little Jones symbol on it. That's kind of funny.
Oh, that's
funny. But other than that, nothing.
Now, the superhero uniform that you wear, did you make this up yourself? Or
Extreme Design FX made the suit. I made the name and I drew the symbols that I wanted on the suit, but I was limited by what I could put bulletproofing under, you know?
Show us, Brian.
Oh, yeah, the gloves. You can't get them off.
And
these are special
so
gloves.
So does this have any protective nature to it?
Like a Kevlar vest underneath.
It's a Kevlar vest. Okay.
It's dragon skin.
And did you always wear that when you were shot, your Kevlar vest? Or did?
Oh, no. It punched gloves. Me straight into Kevlar.
The gloves are full of sand or something.
Back,
yeah.
And
wow.
Took
they're
the
punching gloves.
So I just rolled into a garbage can and collected myself and then, you know, got out of there.
What's going through your mind when you get shot? Do you like, yeah, I figured this would probably happen? Or...
It's sort of a realism to actually try to figure out whether you got shot or not, what really happened. Because I didn't see the shooter. You know, most of the times I come on guns I see, I normally win or at least don't get shot.
You know?
Last time I saw a gun pulled on me, I ended up with my nose broken, but I still wasn't shot.
Yeah.
So this one, I was just walking in an alleyway, and all of a sudden I'm on my back, and the rain is getting in my eyes because it was raining in Seattle, and I can't breathe. And the only thing I'm thinking is, okay, roll under this dumpster and figure out what's going on. So I just rolled under this dumpster and laid there. And when I finally realized, hey, I've been shot, it had been, you know, 5 or 6 minutes, and I was more collected. So I called 911. Then when they answered, I hung up because I realized I'm not going to call and say I'm a superhero and I got shot and I need help.
Right.
So then I drove home and just took the suit off, and my wife convinced me to go to the hospital. And I had a broken rib and some bruising, but I was fine.
Is there good money in being a superhero?
I've made $17 so far.
Oh my gosh,
that's pretty good. Yeah.
That's why you're Rain's going to produce a show for you, and then you can actually capitalize a little.
I'm not going to pay him. I'm going to keep all the money.
Oh yeah, yeah, yeah.
I mean,
yeah.
People have offered me money. I mean, and I've been given money from, you know, different things, but I've donated most of it.
Yeah,
we're almost through it. Building a water well in Africa with Generosity Water. We have the Union Gospel Mission. I donate a lot of the money. If I wanted to be rich, I would have just, you know, I'm a professional fighter in my day job. I make enough money. I don't really need, I don't really need it.
Wow.
Yeah, he's badass.
What a sweet guy.
You know what, Brian? He is the one who knocks.
I'm the one who knocks.
Is this a Batman voice contest? Because Phineas,
I was Breaking Bad last episode, which was fantastic.
What are you doing right now, Rain? You're shooting The Office right now?
Yeah, I was shooting The Office. I got a week off, so I'm dicking around with these guys and doing my thing and blah, blah, blah.
Rain Wilson. Do you ever shave when you're not making The Office?
I never shave. Hey, but you know what? There's this thing. I'm being, quote unquote, honored at Universal City for being in House of a Thousand Corpses when they open the 3D House of a Thousand Corpses ride. Uh-huh. And Rob's going to be there. Yeah. You should come to that thing.
I will.
But you're not being honored.
No, I don't deserve to be honored.
You really don't.
Is that why you texted me the other day?
No. Why did I text you the other day?
You asked me for Rob's email.
Oh, yeah, because I was going to ask him about it. I was like, is this something that I really should go to or something? And he's like, yeah, man, it's cool. You got to go.
But I'm going to put you on the hook while we're on the line. I'm putting you on the hook.
What?
You're coming to Seattle. I want a verbal commission that you're going to come out and at least fight a little crime with me. We'll just do a bar close.
Fight a little crime.
We'll just do a bar close. We'll just get the drunken bar
fights.
Just
do a shoplifting, like at a 7-Eleven.
Just do the drunken bar fights?
Yeah, just the drunken
bar. What are you going to do, throw me at someone? Like, I don't know. I'll put my fists out as I fly through the air. No. Yeah, just use me as a battering ram.
Well, you look like a taser kind of guy. I think that's a good thing. About 50
you're
going to
give
away.
Me a taser?
Absolutely.
I don't want to tase people.
You
should,
neither do I.
You should do the podcast while you're serious. Do a live podcast in Seattle.
There's going to be a lot of this. Oh, they seem fine. They're fine. I'm going to sit in the car.
What about those jaywalkers? Let's tell them not to
do
that.
Hey, guys, wait for the cross sign and then walk. All right. Yeah, we're making the streets
safer. I'm going to hook you guys up.
So all right.
There's some magic happening.
I'll come out and do something. But
you guys call it Rain City. It's the Emerald City. We used to call it Jet City. What does it go by now these days?
You know, I call it Rain City.
Caffeinated City.
Caffeinated City.
Caffeine City.
Yep. Yep.
Heroin City.
Starbucks City.
Hipster or meth head.
Yep.
I call it Temple of the Dog.
We're going to leave you guys to talk about Brian's inner nerd. And
all right, before you do that, let's all get a picture together, and I'll just cut this part out.
I actually don't do photos.
Oh,
just kidding. I was going to say, I'm sorry.
You're all over the fucking internet.
Legit. Like a
thanks,
legit
Nerdist.
We'll get a quick photo, and then Brian, we have a few minutes left in the interview with you. I have a couple more questions. And
Don't commit crimes in Seattle, because I'm in California. I'm here.
Yeah.
I'm going to get you.
All right, so really quick.
Do you mind sending him? I'm the guy for it, yeah.
Oh, thank you so much.
He's a professional photographer. Peter is the organizer of the superhero movement.
Like, oh, yeah, take the shield off.
He knows all the vigilante
superheroes,
real superheroes all across the country.
Oh, gotcha. Over.
So we thought of... Okay.
Yeah, that way you can...
riffing
that.
Before you came in about the superhero named Superhero.
Oh, God. I don't like that.
Were you talking about...
I don't want to be so far in advance.
About Superhero? He's a real guy.
There is one?
Yeah. All right, here it is, guys. One more. We've got a blank. Awesome. Yeah, Superhero's out of Florida. His name's Dale.
He drives around in a, what is it, a Corvette?
So yeah.
Nice to meet you. The helmet on.
So nice to meet you.
Nice meeting you as well.
Rain Wilson.
I'll text you, like, their info.
All right. Good to see you.
Thanks for coming in.
Okay. Right. Good meeting you.
Too. So long, Nerdists.
So long, Rain Wilson.
Take it easy.
All right, see you later.
All right.
You never know who's going to drop by the Nerdist podcast.
Children's Charity guy.
Wow, cool.
Oh, wow.
That's him?
He does look like he's from Florida.
Nice.
Oh, this picture is awesome. Oh, my God. This picture is awesome. All right. I'm very excited about that picture.
So,
before we were rudely interrupted.
Yeah.
That was fun.
That was nice.
Phoenix Jones, he's got a lot of videos on the YouTubes.
All right. And if you did not have a studio with pane glass, clear glass, we wouldn't have seen that.
We would not have had that moment.
That's like an old-timey Johnny Carson walk-on.
Just all of a sudden, like when Don Rickles would come over, or Burt Reynolds.
Hey, hockey puck.
What was that? There was that story where Rickles like came across to do a walk-on on Johnny's show, and like he didn't time it right, so he came out, there was this whole thing, and then he left the studio, and he didn't realize it was all during a commercial break.
Oh. Yeah.
There was that classic clip where Rickles had broken Johnny's cigarette case.
Yes.
And so Johnny goes over. Rickles was on this submarine show called
Sharky.
A Navy show, CPO Sharky.
Yeah.
A Navy show. And so, Carson, during his show, just goes over in the middle of taping of their show and fucks around with him.
Breaks a prop or two, yeah.
Oh, man. Those would have been such fun days to be.
Loved it.
All right. So just, we have a few minutes left. I have a couple quick things that I want to ask you about. Number one is, you probably don't have to audition for stuff anymore, but what was your audition prep process? Cause that's a whole different animal than actually when you're on a set and you're working and you're in the environment and it's so artificial, and I always hate the process so much. So what was your take on it?
Well, first of all, I do still audition.
You do?
Depends on what you want. If there's a script out there that you read or a play that you go, oh my God, this is fantastic, and I really want to do this, go read for it. That's what you do. You're an actor. You do your work. If you don't have to read, it's better, because then the odds are much, much higher that you'll get that role. So if they say he doesn't have to read, he would just like to meet, then... And they say, it's not an audition, it's just a meeting. It's always an audition.
Sure,
you got to
sure.
go in there and have your ducks in a row and know exactly what you want to say and build confidence in that person that you're the guy for this role.
Mm-hmm.
I always had this this feeling that I would work on a scene to where I would imagine that I'm the 30th guy reading the same role coming into the room, and their hand is on their... face, just like leaning, like, yeah, next, thank you, good, come on in. And if I imagined that something I did would get them to take their hand off their face off their hand and just kind of pay attention, then I've done my job. It's just in increments.
Mm-hmm.
But what you do is you want to find things that are germane to the story. You can't veer off the text. but that you're seeing that may not have been seen before.
Okay.
So that means if you need to add a line, say a line, add a line. I have respect for the writer, but not to the point where it's like you don't mess with a comma on any of this. It's no. To me, writing is a blueprint, and you honor the writing, but you can't live in the blueprint. You still have to build the house.
Right.
And so don't give it so much reverie that you don't grab onto something. And if that means adjusting, then adjust it. Because when you get on the set, that's what you're doing anyway.
Yeah.
That you might say, you know, this line always cut it. Done. You don't have to go through those angst of like, oh, but it's not that you got to say every word or, you know. No. Just adjust it to fit what you're going for.
You know, most people in your position would refuse to audition for stuff. And I think that's sort of what kind of makes you kind of an actor's actor, as opposed to like, I just want to be famous, you know, which is they're just different paths. And it's refreshing because I get weird. And even at the tiny place in my career, if people want me to audition for things, I'm like, I don't want to. But I think it's just more because I fear that process a lot, and I'm not as comfortable in the audition process because it's so artificial.
But you don't have to. It doesn't have to be. And that's truly the actor's job. If there's a takeaway from this, know that your job is to create an interesting, compelling character and leave it in that room and then walk away. When I leave an audition, and I've done this for 20 years, I would take my script and I'd go back to my office and I'd throw it in a big basket. And I wouldn't think of it. I wouldn't tell people I'm up for this role. And I wouldn't say anything because it's my business.
Yeah.
And then I get a call from my agent saying, oh, yeah, hey, they want you to do that job, such and such. And I go, which one? And I wouldn't remember. Which one was that? And I go, oh, that guy. Yeah, I like that guy. Oh, okay, let's start working on that again. Yeah. And it saves you. It's not about the ego. It's not about the end result. It's about the process of what you're doing and finding joy in that process. I love to act, so I don't particularly like the fame end of it.
Mm-hmm.
The fame is interesting because that helps me to get other work.
Sure.
So I would never say I'm a star. I'm not going to do that. Mm-hmm. You know, I don't want to put that much energy out to that.
Yeah.
But it's not something I seek. I don't particularly enjoy being recognized or that sort of thing.
Right.
I enjoy affecting an audience.
Yeah.
When you can say something and the audience gasps or hisses or laughs or whatever the correct emotion you want to convey.
Well, and also, you know, you're in a league where, how many Emmys have you won? Like six or something?
No, three.
You've won three.
Yeah.
Okay. So, but that puts you, but going through those steps put you in places where you can be in environments where you can work with, where Tom Hanks can call you and say, please come, you know, please come be Buzz Aldrin.
Well, when it came to Breaking Bad, when I read the pilot for Breaking Bad, it was the best drama pilot I had ever read. And I thought, I got to get in here right away, because as soon as other actors read this, they're going to go after this big time. And so I called my agent. I said, get me in this week. And they said, well, you're scheduled for next week. Nope, get me in this week. Got to be this week. And so they called and said, do you have any space? Can he come in? Yeah, actually, yeah, that's absolutely fine. So I got in there and I pitched away and I said, this is, you know, and told him and gave him all my energy and this is what I think. And I had a leg up because I had worked with Vince Gilligan 10 years earlier on an X-Files episode that he remembered me from. And so he was thinking of me, not that this he's writing it for me, but he thought of me for this role when he was writing it.
Oh, wow. So that's the perfect confluence of you're already kind of in his head and you come in with a really solid take on the character, and that must have been like a gift to him. How long was it before you found out, or did he say right away like, I think you might be the right guy?
Well, he wanted me to do the role and I was grateful for that. But Sony and AMC were not so convinced, because here's the guy, the goofy dad from Malcolm in the Middle, to go now and do Walter White on Breaking Bad. It doesn't seem to transfer, does it?
Yeah, it's almost like you're an actor that can play different roles.
See, the people don't want that. They want to see the guy who's closest to that.
But I don't think anyone will make that mistake with you anymore, because now that you have a body of work and all these different shows, I think they see you as like, oh no, Cranston's like utility. You can stick him in anything and he's going to find it and make it work.
Well, that takes a lot of work on my part to not repeat what I've done. And you mentioned something earlier about, God, Mad Men works so well, you'd think that AMC would just put a bunch of clones of Mad Men. Well, that would shoot themselves in the foot.
Absolutely.
Same thing with an actor. Coming off of 7 years of Malcolm in the Middle, the worst thing I could have done is taken a role as a goofy, fun dad.
Mm-hmm.
Because I did that. It would be redundant. And so I had to turn away from it. And I'm fine with it because I'm not after the money.
Yeah.
I'm not after the fame.
Yeah.
That's it. Put that to bed. Now what else?
Those kinds of choices, and I think this is applicable to any kind of thing that people do, any sort of craft. You're talking about the difference between big picture, long-term choices and short-term survival choices. And those short-term survival choices are, let's make 10 Mad Men's, let me take another role as a goofy dad. And the big picture is, no. I want to have a sustainable career, yeah. And I need to plan some things out and branch out and, yeah. You know, like show that I can do this.
Yeah. That was the whole design, yeah.
What does it feel like, and this will kind of be my last thing, and then we'll wrap it up, but I've never really asked anyone, like, the being nominated for an Emmy the first time, and you go, and is it, you know, are you shitting your pants the whole time, or is it just sort of like, you know, are you cool with it, or what does any of that feel like?
I did shat my pants, but fortunately I was wearing the adult diaper.
Yes.
So that worked out
Everything
well.
Worked out okay.
It is. It's surreal. You don't realize you're there in the auditorium. You're nominated. First, I was nominated a few times for Malcolm,
mm-hmm.
and I never won, but that's okay.
Lithgow.
Well, Brad Garrett won once. I think David Pierce won it once, and then Jeremy Piven, I think, mm-hmm. I think it was that one. But anyway, but it's you're invited to the party. It's like you were. The pretty girl asks you to dance, and yeah. It's like, wow, really?
She didn't go home with you, but she asked you to dance.
Yeah, it's like, yeah. Exactly. It's like, I'm here at the, you know, it's fantastic. And if you of that mindset that I'm here to create,
mm-hmm.
that's all dessert.
Yeah.
All that stuff is dessert. Do you eat dessert every day? I don't. It's like, no, I'm fine. I'm good. I don't want something sweet right now. I'm fine. I don't need all that. I don't want all that. I turn the other way. I try to avoid attention because David Duchovny said something very interesting on a panel once, and it's very true. He says, we as actors are the observers, but if you get to be famous, all of a sudden you become the observed.
Oh, wow.
And therefore unable to observe. Because behavior changes.
Yeah.
If you're observing people and they notice you watching, their behavior changes.
Of course.
So you lose out on that. Right. And if people are looking at you, you lose out on, it's like, oh, okay, everybody's here. And okay. So much for observing people.
Oh, that's almost like a weird quantum physics thing there about like how you ruin the experiment when you observe it kind of a thing. And it happens to comedians as they get more famous is that they're not living life the same way that people are anymore. So they're not going to be noticing regular, normal things.
Not so much. Yeah. But you get an attaboy when you get up on stage. If you're famous, you get up on stage and they're already clapping for you and they're ready to, you know, you get that little boost.
Comedy credit.
Yeah. A little comedy street cred, right? Yeah.
When you're up on when they announce your name, they're Bryan Cranston, and you get up on stage, do you remember anything you're saying, or is it just like thank you a bunch of people and what do I do?
Well, I mean, when I'm doing talk shows and things, that I do, you know, you come out and you have an idea of what you want to do and things like that and to entertain, but when that comes up, when it's unexpected, when you don't know if you're going to go up, it is unreal. And I remember the first time my wife, during the commercial breaks, the guy, the cameraman, each nominee has a camera person in front of them, obviously, to take their picture.
Yeah.
And so the camera with a guy, you know, wrangling the cords and things like that, and they're all dressed in black, and they're looking at a piece of paper, and that's him right there. That's right. Okay. And they got the camera on you. And my wife sees that, and her chest starts to heave, and her palms start to get sweaty. And I'm trying to, honey, it's not going to happen. There were 7 episodes of Breaking Bad. It was, we're grateful to be here. Just relax, because I'm not, she said, aren't you nervous? I go, no, I'm going to sit here. And as soon as they announce a name, I'm going to applaud for the guy who got the thing, and then, you know, that's it. I didn't write a speech. It's like, it's not going to happen. And then they say, Bryan Cranston. And that first millisecond, I go, wait a minute, I know. Whoa.
I know
and you go, and you kiss your wife, and they're, you know, this screaming, and then you're going, oh my God, and you're dizzy.
Yeah.
And you take a few steps toward the stage. And my thought was that first time I won was, oh, please, God, please, please, just say one sentence that makes sense. Just one. Just, you know, with a noun and a verb maybe and an adjective, that would be great. If I can just put them all together and they actually make sense, that's all I care about.
He ended that sentence with a preposition.
Oh, no!
Give back this Emmy! Yeah.
So I'm walking up there. I see Kiefer Sutherland was the one who announced it when I first won. And I looked up at him, and he's probably 70 feet away, because I was on the side that first time. Oh, put him on the side. He's not going. And I get up, and I'm thinking, oh, God. And I could feel my head kind of, I'm swooning. I'm just like in this, I'm moving, and I'm going toward this direction, but I don't know how. And I'm thinking, oh, a rush of thoughts come into your head that have absolutely nothing to do with where you are. Oh, I need to wash my car.
I'd like to thank my car. No, yeah, that's not what I meant.
And then moments after I stepped onto the stage, I'm in front, and he's handing it to me. I thought, what happened to the 70 feet? The 70 feet just went zip, like you're in, you know, light speed. Wow. And then I've got it. Then you turn, there's 4,000 people and 4 million people or 15, 20 million people around the world. I don't know. And, oh man. And you're holding this trophy and it's like, oh, it's beautiful. And you're thinking, oh, okay. And that's what I didn't want to do. I didn't want to be, oh gosh. Oh man. Oh, so I just take a breath and then go. And then as soon as you start, there's a big teleprompter in the middle of the hall, and there's a person standing next to it pointing, and the teleprompter reads, "Wrap it up."
Oh fuck!
Wrap it up, and it's like, I just got here. Well, they count the walk and all the things,
sucks.
And it's like, wrap it up, and then it goes red. When they really mean it.
So you're already shitting your pants, and then someone's standing over you going, faster, 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 you better faster.
They're pointing like
this. Don't fuck this up, faster.
They're pointing on a rapid speed, pointing to it, and it's flashing
wild
now.
Gesticulation.
And it's like, okay. You know, so it's a tremendous amount of pressure, unexpected as it was. And so I knew that, God, if that ever happened again, I want to make sure that I have at least a thought in my head of what I'm going to do, you know, so.
And it did. And then at the end of the day, you got to put your Emmy away and go back to work as an actor and kind of forget about it, I would imagine.
Put it right next to your Cranston dick grape.
Hey! That's right.
Bringing it all back. Well, we're at the end and we've dominated enough of your time, but this was wonderful. Thank you so much for coming on, Brian Cranston.
Great, Chris. Thank you very much.
I mean, so much. And again, congratulations with the show and Drive. I can't wait to see in Contagion coming out in September. And we'll put this up soon so that, you know, have enough time to promote all that. But,
great. Cool.
Good. It was really fun to reconnect with you. Thanks for coming in.
My pleasure. Let's do it again.
All right. Enjoy your burrito. No, wait. What did we say before? Embrace your tiny donkey.
Now leaving Nerdist.com. Enjoy your burrito.
This episode of the Nerdist Podcast was brought to you by Hover.com. Hover is domain name registration and management that is simple. For 10% off your new domain, go to hover.com/Nerdist. This episode was also brought to you by GoToMeeting. Meet easily with colleagues even when traveling or working remotely. For your free 30-day trial, visit GoToMeeting.com and enter the promo code Nerdist.
Nancy's love story could have been ripped right out of the pages of one of her own novels.
She was a romance mystery writer who happens to be married to a chef.
But this story didn't end with a happily ever after.
When I stepped into the kitchen, I could see that Chef Brophy was on the ground, and I heard somebody say, call 911.
As writers, we'd written our share of murder mysteries. So when suspicion turned to Dan's wife, Nancy, we weren't that surprised.
The first person they look at would be the spouse.
We understand that's usually the way they do it.
But we began to wonder, had Nancy gotten so wrapped up in her own novels?
There are murders in all of the books.
That she was playing them out in real life? You can listen to Happily Never After, Dan and Nancy, early and ad-free right now by joining Wondery Plus in the Wondery app or on Apple Podcasts.